hearing the 20th Century Fox fanfare at the beginning. And then with just this slight delay, and then wham! You know, the Star Wars main title appears. Talk about a goosebump moment. The opening of that film just did it. So somehow he struck something that resonated with, I think, everyone who's ever seen those movies.
John Williams at the Movies. It's a brand new recording featuring the Dallas Winds with Jerry Junkin conducting. He's been with this ensemble for 26 years, and they're really excited to present wind band arrangements of some of your favorite movies. That's what we're exploring this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher. So let's start off by just having you tell me, how did you get the bug to be a wind band director?
You're not the first person to ask me that, but, you know, I think it's just somehow part of my DNA. My father was a high school band director, and so I just grew up with it. I was going to band concerts in the womb, and so I was just a part of that growing up, and it's really about the only serious thing I ever really contemplated doing for whatever reason. And I was telling some people yesterday that I've been doing this now. This is my 31st year at UT and my 26th year with the Dallas Winds. And it seems like it has gone in such a flash. So every moment of it I've enjoyed.
Well, that's a good sign that you're doing something you love.
Oh, yeah. You know, I set the alarm every morning and it never goes off. So I always get up before the alarm and, anxious to get going.
Your latest recording kind of hits along the popular vein, and it's celebrating the movie music of John Williams. I know you put out at least 30 recordings. How many have you put out with Dallas Winds?
You know, I think this is like number... I shouldn't even say because I may be wrong, but I won't think 18, something like that. But a number of them, anyway. And we've been fortunate with the Dallas Winds to be affiliated almost since the beginning. There have been a couple of exceptions, but almost all those recordings have been made with the reference label.
I didn't realize that John Williams loved writing, arranging, conducting, and, well, performing wind band music. This was kind of revelatory and exciting to see.
You know, he was a member of the Air Force Band. He was a pianist and played in the jazz combos and did some arranging and writing for the Air Force Band. And so that's in his background as well. And of course, we know these film scores, which are so beautifully and lavishly composed and orchestrated, many of them performed by the London Symphony or large studio orchestras. And much of the music on this CD they are arrangements that have been done by people that John Williams is tasked with that job of making a band version of it. But he's very hands-on. All of these are from what they call the signature series. So they are all with his approval. And in fact, I've seen some of the manuscripts where he has actually made notations. And so he's been very hands-on about the production of these arrangements. And they're kind of came into being as a result of him revisiting his band roots a number of years ago and conducting a concert with the United States Marine Band and just falling in love with them and with the medium. And that has prompted many more new arrangements for the wind band.
How did you decide what to put on this recording of all those movies and the arrangements available?
You know, that becomes the most difficult thing, right? When you're putting a disc like this together. I mean, sometimes a disc that has three pieces and it's built around one central focus, that's kind of easy. In this case, when there's so much material, the difficult thing is where to stop. Because this could have easily been a three-disc, four-disc set. And in fact, we have plans to record a volume two coming up within the next year or so. But for this one, we wanted to have some of the iconic pieces of his. So clearly, the Star Wars main title has to be on there. The Superman March, the Olympic fanfare and theme, which is you know, all of these have become iconic pieces. But then we wanted to do some other things too. One of the collaborations I'm really proud of occurs on this CD, and that's Christopher Martin's performance of With a Malice Toward None from the film Lincoln. Christopher Martin being the principal trumpet of the New York Philharmonic, and is such an extraordinary artist, and he plays this so beautifully, and John Williams actually wrote this piece for him. He took it out of the score and made this version for solo trumpet, and so obviously I wanted to include that, and we were able to work it out with Chris for him to come and record it. So over time, and as you think, the recording starts to take a shape a little bit, and it can't all be the same kind of upbeat music, so there has to be some contrast in it. That leads, you know, from one piece to the next piece. So I'm actually quite pleased with how it turned out.
There's another film that I had kind of forgotten about, and I'm not even sure if I've ever seen it. It's the 1972 Western with John Wayne, The Cowboys.
Yes, the piece is called The Cowboys Overture. And there's not actually a Cowboys Overture in the movie. So it's the lead credits, and it's also the end credits and a mixture of some of the rest of this music. And that is a remarkable score. It's worth watching the movie, worth watching the film, just to hear the music. I mean, the film is good also. It's very entertaining. But I think it was after the movie came out, if I'm remembering the story correctly, it was Andre Previn who told John Williams, you've got to turn this music into a standalone concert piece because it's just so thrilling and so remarkable. And over time, he took that to heart, and this is the result.
And it was this score that caught the ear of Steven Spielberg, wasn't it?
That's right. And then that became this incredible collaboration, which, you know, still continues to this day.
Yeah, wow, it's amazing. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, was that their first collaboration?
You know, I'm not sure. The dates seem to run together, but I thought that it was Jaws was actually...
Yes, because Close Encounters expanded on the Jaws theme then.
Right. And, you know, there were so many from around that same time. I think that Jaws was, I think, the first really attention-getting score of their collaboration. And then that led to all these other things. Excerpts from Close Encounters of the Third Kind is on this disc. And then also, of course, The Adventures on Earth from E.T., which is one of the most thrilling pieces in all of movie music, I think. So all of those collaborations are just remarkable, I think.
Why do you think it's important to have this music available as wind band arrangements?
Well, I think, first of all, there's a fantastic interest in this music, just for music's sake. You know, it's interesting that when we record something on the reference label, it begins to have multiple audiences because there are people who are audiophiles who have remarkable equipment in their home studio, and they will just purchase anything that Reference Recordings puts out. It doesn't matter what the medium, who the performers are, because they are so enthralled with Keith Johnson's sound, the way he's able to capture sound. But then in this case, there's also the band audience, people who love band music, wind band music. And to further that, now it's all the people who love John Williams music, which he's such a wonderful figure in American music. There are people who will, you know, flock to anything by John Williams. So I think it was important in a way to have this catalog of music available to people so that they hear this, in a way, fresh approach to it with wind band rather than symphony orchestra. And then the involvement, obviously, of a great soloist like Chris Martin.
Yeah, he really added a lot to the arrangements. It was really delightful to hear him performing. Why do you think people are attracted to the wind band sound?
I don't know that people are attracted to the wind band sound all of the time, but I think when it is skillfully done and when composers treat it in a really wonderful way, then it's amazing because you have this incredible palette of color with all of these woodwind and brass instruments, plus the amazing addition of whatever you want in percussion. Percussion is so versatile these days. It's really quite extraordinary what that can add to a wind band. And there's also this unique oddity is that wind bands almost always have a double bass. And you think, well, that's got to be useless. Why is there a double bass standing over there on the side of the band? But yet you can always hear it. Adds a really unique sound, especially in pizzicato movement, and it almost doesn't matter how many people are playing. You still hear that unique sound, but coupled then with the possibilities of harp, with piano, with organ, which we use on this recording in Close Encounters, that you will hear the rumble of those 32-foot stops at a couple of places. I think there's just this infinite color palette that really appeals to people. And when it isn't so appealing is when there are too many doublings, I think, and when the sound can get thick and maybe a little bit gray. But as I said, when it's skillfully done, then it's a really thrilling, unique sound. And it's not necessarily, it's not better than anything else. It's just different. It's just a different kind of voice. And I think that's what people might glean from this recording. It's just a little bit different sound that's equally effective.
Oh, interesting. Did you use any unusual percussion instruments throughout this recording?
Not really too much on this recording, except for the fact that it's a very large percussion battery on pieces like the Close Encounters. There are two pieces. The Scherzo for X-Wings and the Jedi Steps in Finale. And both of those arrangements, settings, transcriptions, if you will, for band use a lot of percussion instruments, but in the score in such a way that they don't necessarily draw attention to themselves. They just add to the color. And of course, The Adventures on Earth from E.T. has a lot of percussion. The only other thing I will mention is that there are two pieces almost inserted as encores at the end of the disc. One is the march from 1941, and one is the last piece is the Star Spangled Banner, John Williams' Star Spangled Banner arrangement, which he did for the Rose Bowl when he was the honorary Grand Marshal of the Rose Parade. And that one, you'll hear cannon fire. So you could say that that's an unusual percussion instrument, but the sound of these howitzers, which were recorded by Keith Johnson and then overdubbed into the recording, I think makes a great effect.
I know this is going to be hard. Is there a piece on this recording that you want to make sure we listen to Maybe before anything else, rather than starting on from start to finish, if we could only listen to one piece, which piece should we zoom in on?
Yeah, that is difficult. But I suppose if you were to tie my hands behind my back and put the knife to the throat or whatever and say, you got to say it, well, then I would say that the With Malice Toward None. Chris Martin's performance on that is extraordinary, but also I think the way that that sound is captured is really beautiful. And the piece, again, it gives some contrast to what we sometimes think of as the great energetic John Williams, the E.T.s of the Star Wars, those sort of film scores. But this is Americana through and through, and it's one of those pieces, like John Williams does so beautifully on almost every piece, but takes you to a time and a place. And like I said, just the combination of the artistry of Chris Martin with that piece, I would say that's one you want to be sure that you pay attention to when you're listening to the disc.
I do want to talk a little bit more about Star Wars, because you've created kind of a suite here with the four pieces, and this was the film that really made Williams kind of an icon in the film music industry, and he was tapping into Hollywood's golden age there,
right.
Looking back to composers like Korngold and Franz Waxman about, using those leitmotifs for the musical themes.
Right.
Let's talk just a little bit more about the band arrangements of these pieces and maybe what's unique about them.
Right. Well, like so many people, I'm old enough to remember seeing the original Star Wars movie and hearing the 20th Century Fox fanfare at the beginning. And then with just this slight delay, and then wham, the Star Wars main title appears. Talk about a goosebump moment. I can still picture the theater that I was in. I can picture the group of people that, were surrounded by at that particular time. The opening of that film just did it. So somehow he struck something that resonated with, I think, everyone who's ever seen those movies. And because that is so brass and wind heavy, and along with percussion, that I think it translates beautifully into the band medium. So there have been people who have heard this who have told me, well, I don't miss the strings at all. So, and I think, they're sincere about that, because it just lends itself so beautifully and it is so convincing. The next piece in that grouping of four pieces you were talking about is from The Empire Strikes Back, and that's, of course, the famous Imperial March. And again, it translates perfectly because it is, again, so heavily brass and percussion dominated. Interestingly, though, there's some lightness in that you hear this triple tonguing in the flutes and in the harp. And that is straight out of the original. I mean, there's so much of this that is just extracted exactly as Williams wrote it, as it first appeared in the orchestral scores. And then the next two pieces are the ones that I mentioned, the Scherzo for X-Wings and the Jedi Steps and Finale. And the Jedi Steps, I'll say something about that, because for those of you who remember the Force Awakens movie, it ends the final, as the titles are going there, it ends quite quietly with the little light motif being played in the celeste. And we decided to use the concert ending that Mr. Williams wrote. And this is one of the arrangements that they were being shown to me There was a big squiggle at the end, and then this was orchestrated and written in John Williams' hand, this concert ending. So we decided to make the recording using that ending. So that's not the one that people are accustomed to hearing in the film. But again, all of these pieces, I think, translate so well into the wind band medium because from the get-go, they were so wind, percussion, and brass heavy that it's kind of an easy maneuver to bring it into the wind band world.
It's interesting because when I think about an orchestral sound, I think about it being sort of rich and lush. And on this recording, that's exactly how I describe it, rich and lush, because of perhaps the balance and maybe it's the arrangements themselves or your conducting and the blend that you're creating. It's a really, really appealing sound.
Well, the arrangements are fantastic. So I have to give Stephen Bulla and Paul Lavender and all of the people who had played such a role. I mean, these are brilliant, brilliant arrangements. And also, quite frankly, someone told me one time that the secret to being a really great conductor is to conduct really great musicians. So I'm fortunate to be able to do that with the Dallas Winds because that's a remarkable collection of performers. So they make my work easy and make me look much better than I am.
Tremendous advocate for music ed in the public schools. Tell me why you believe that's so important.
Well, it is. It's kind of the center of everything, right? I think that music education is so important, and it's not just for survival of the species, you know, for musicians. It goes so far beyond that, that there's all sorts of data that people know about, and I think I see it all the time because at the University of Texas, we have this big comprehensive band program. And so we have a lot of students who are not music majors who participate, certainly in the marching band and the pep bands and other things like that, who then play in concert bands that meet in the springtime. And those people go on to be fantastic engineers, doctors, lawyers, teachers, whatever. But they're not making music their life. However, I know, because I just get feedback from them all the time. I just received a letter the other day, an email, from one of our former students who is a wonderful saxophonist, a kid who was in the marching band for a number of years, who's now a physician in Amarillo, and he's just doing fantastic work, just doing great. And he gives a lot of credit to this, to his musical training, not only here, but certainly before that in the public schools. And so you just see this all the time. And I'm just convinced that whatever a person's life path, a mathematician, a scientist, an engineer, they will be a better mathematician, scientist, engineer for having had contact with the arts. And so I think whatever we can possibly do to foster that and to continue that so that students can continue to have these kinds of unique experiences, which they cannot get anywhere else, other than performing in musical ensembles, knowing something about music, having contact, being taken to concerts, having that kind of experience makes them a different kind of person than they would be without it.
That's new classical tracks from American Public Media. You can sign up to win a copy of this recording. Just go online at yourclassical.org. Special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.